Quote today's guest, David Dilley: due to the flood of manipulated, one-sided, and sometimes slanted research thrown at most citizens of the world during the past 15 years, a great many people, including our elected officials, have literally been brainwashed into believing that societies of the world accept the concept that global warming is caused by humans and industry burning fossil fuels since the industrial age began 150 years ago. Okay, most of you may be global warming enthusiasts, but I ask you, listen, I appreciate what Dilley has to say, especially since he's an independent researcher, an extremely rare breed these days. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Can we first make a point about your status as an independent researcher in these times of the corporatization of science and research before we get into the actual topic of global warming?
That's an excellent point. I am independent, not funded by any entities such as oil companies or any governments or any companies. Solely my own resources are involved in my research and also my ebook. So it's totally independent from anything else going on around the world. It's my own research, and as I performed my research during the past 20 years, this is what happened, is it evolved into global warming. I wasn't even going to do the issue of global warming, but my research kind of evolved into that, and I saw a connection, and that's why I'm going out on my own to show my research.
Who does fund your research?
I do. It's totally just funded right out of my pocket.
Okay. Well, where is the best place to begin? Do you, before we move into perhaps why the UN and the IPCC's research is perhaps a little skewed, or shall we move right into temperatures and CO2 levels peaking every 116,000 years and where we are in that cycle right now?
I think we could start on why we got into this mess, the debate to begin with, and then that would open up the door to let's kind of tell the rest of the story.
Great.
As Paul Harvey would say.
Okay, well, you go. You know where we are in this cycle.
Okay, Robin. What has really gotten us into the mess started way back in the 1960s, the 1970s. The very first paper written saying that carbon dioxide was bad for the atmosphere or Earth was done by, of all things, the Atomic Energy Commission. What the federal government wanted to do was, well, that was the new wave. Let's do atomic energy, our power plants. So they had to start the scheme here on, okay, CO2 is kind of bad, but burning coal, oil, and so forth. Let's go to atomic energy. So that was the number one key where it started. Then that kind of settled down, and then in 1988, we had the Kyoto Summit, where this was the first step of Agenda 21, United Nations Agenda 21. And the Agenda 21 may take up such issues as carbon dioxide and also a possibility of taxing carbon dioxide so they could gather in tax money to redistribute to third world countries. So this was the United Nations getting their hands into the pot here also in 1988. Then this moved on to 1992 for the first meeting in the White House, which was with President Clinton and also Al Gore. And it continued right through the Bush administration and into the current administration. So it's both Republican and Democrat democratic issues.
Excuse me, can I interrupt one second here and say taxing CO2, the carbon dioxide, what is that about?
Yes, carbon tax.
Okay.
This is set up by the United Nations. This is what they want to do, and it was voted on. So far, it's been kind of turned down. But the United Nations, to help out third world countries, this was a kind of a an idea brought up by the United Nations that, well, let's tax industries that spew out a lot of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
And then this tax will be used to go into the United Nations pot to be distributed to third world countries to help them out. So it's really an idea of taxing the rich to help the poor is what it is. Some of it's a good idea, but you have to have the correct thoughts behind it. Don't lie to the public that, well, CO2 is bad, this is why we're doing it.
Right. I mean, taxing pollutants, I think, is a great idea, but not skewing all of the cycle research that's been around forever that has been neglected as of late.
Well, this is what it evolved into. To get their point across, they had to make carbon dioxide look like a very bad gas, which we'll talk about later on. It is actually a very good gas. We can't... Earth doesn't survive without it. It has to have a proper amount of carbon dioxide. If we have too little, we don't have enough oxygen.
Right, and it's a very small percentage of the greenhouse gases, isn't that correct?
Extremely small. The greenhouse gas only makes up about 1% of the atmospheric gases. Of the 1%, which is greenhouse gas, only about 1.5 to up to 4% of it is carbon dioxide. That's all it is. The biggest greenhouse gas is water vapor. Makes up 96% of the greenhouse gases. It's a very, very important greenhouse gas, water vapor. And no one really talks about water vapor, which also varies during global warming, global cooling cycles. It's much, much, much more important. But however, getting back to the United Nations and Agenda 21, one thing they wanted to do to control the thoughts on carbon dioxide being bad is for a good 15-year period from 1995 up to just about present, European countries and governments and the United States government issues research grants to universities. Now, research grants are very, very important to university systems, research systems, because that's how they survive. So anyway, during this whole period, 1995 to present, the grants were skewed tremendously towards man's connection, burning of fossil fuels, etc., to global warming. No grants were available to study natural science, natural cycles, or natural science, we could say, but natural cycles. You could not get a grant for that. It was to show man's involvement in global warming. Because of this, the only research papers being published in science journals were man's connection to global warming. Because of that, the media, this is the only information that the media picked up, was man's connection to global warming, that it's bad, man is causing global warming. So that hyped up the media. Then articles by the media hyped up the governments to even issue more grants to show that man is causing global warming. And then more papers came out and that hyped up the media even more. But there is not any research being done on natural cycles, or very little research. Most of it's being done in the private sector, such with myself and my corporation.
Yes. David, could you give a little bit of your qualification and what you've been doing in order to be doing the work that you are?
Okay. I've got a master's degree in meteorology / climatology. I spent 20 years as a forecaster meteorologist with the National Weather Service. And since 1991, I set up my corporation, Global Weather Oscillations Incorporated, with a specific understanding that weather and climate occurs in cycles. And this is because I noticed this when I was a forecaster prior to 1991, that weather and climate comes in cycles. So I spent 20 years researching the atmospheric force and mechanisms that cause changes in the climate, anywhere from sunspots to what we'll be talking about, the lunar-solar precession, which is gravitational cycles of the moon and sun as it changes patterns on Earth. And I am author of the e-book, Global Warming, Global Cooling, Natural Cause Found. That was my first e-book put out. It's available on my website free of charge. That was in 2007. And then my latest one is Natural Climate Pulse. It's an updated version of my first e-book. That's also on my website.
Right. Now, so your argument is not that the Earth isn't warming up, but, you know, everyone has jumped on the bandwagon of the industrial CO2 is causing it, when actually that is not the case, according to your research and the natural system and cycle that we've seen going on for many, 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 many years.
That's correct. Most of the research that is available to the media or the public through the grant system has studied mainly the past 100 to 120 years. That's one global warming cycle. We started to warm up in about 1870 or so in the global warming cycle. Well, the thing is, global warming cycles come about every 220, 230 years. During the past 1,200 years, we have had five global warming cycles. However, all we hear about is the current global warming cycle. Each global warming cycle that comes every 230 years is made up of two 10-year periods of elevated temperatures, very warm temperatures. The 1930s, 10 years of very warm temperatures, as warm as it is today. And then the past 10 years, from about 2002 to now, very warm temperatures. Every global warming cycle has this twin, what I call twin peaks, separated by 50, 60 years of cool weather. It was very cold in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, very cool. This is a typical global warming cycle. We saw this back in the 1700s and 1500s, 1300s, all the way back to 800 A.D., This is a typical global warming cycle. This cycle is no different than the other global warming cycles. The only difference is this cycle is as warm, actually not quite as warm, as the one back around 800 to 1000 AD.
And the reason for that is because it's falling within another section of a cycle.
Well, that's right. It's another section of the cycle. As I was indicating, global warming cycles come about every 220, 230 years. But what happens is about every fifth global warming cycle is the warmest of the whole set of global warming cycles. So you go back 1,000 or 1,200 years and you have a cycle as warm or warmer than today. You go back 1,200, 1,500 years before that and you have a cycle just as warm and so forth and so forth. And actually, if you go back about 6,000 years ago, it was much warmer than today, and we had 50% less ice in the Arctic than we do today.
So from here, where I want to go is how, just briefly now, how are these calculations able to be made? And I noticed in reading the ebook, which I found very fascinating and informative, the averaging of data is part of the problem in what's being presented today. Is that true?
Oh, so very true. What the IPCC, which is part of the Agenda 21, which is the United Nations Panel on Climate Change, what they like to do, or what most scientists do, is we need a history, past history of temperatures and carbon dioxide. We can get the past 100 years or 1,200 years through tree rings, but that doesn't show us what the past carbon dioxide was. And we want to know what the history of the carbon dioxide is. So what we have to use, or one method, is using ice core samples. through ice core samples, what happens over time is you get air bubbles trapped in the ice. And so if we can find very old ice, we can carbon date it and we can figure out what the temperature was and also how much carbon dioxide was in the air over, you know, in a given period of time. So the Russians went down to Lake Vostok in the Antarctic, a very deep crater lake, and they drilled down 13,000 feet, and at the bottom was ice that was 430,000 years old. So they dated all the samples, and what by dating it, though, what they do is because it's the ice is so deep and compressed by weight, you can't tell one year from the other. So they do a mean value of the carbon dioxide and temperatures over about a 1,000-year period. And the trouble is with this, over a 1,000-year period, you have 4 to 5 global warming cycles. So you wouldn't expect it to be perfectly the same. So when you mean a value, it's like, okay, you have a pocket of change, and you take a dime and nickel and a penny, and you mean it out, and you're going to have more like the value of 8 cents or 7 cents or something like that, mean value, whereas you miss the big value of the dime that you meaned in there, which I call peaks. So this is what happens on the carbon dioxide cycle. When they take a 1,000-year mean, they average out and eliminate all the big peaks in carbon dioxide. And this is why scientists say that carbon dioxide has never been above 300 parts per million. That's because that's what the ice cores show on 1,000-year means. Never been above 300 parts per million. However, we know by taking the mean, there are huge spikes in there, probably up as high as today. And I do have some other data from other researchers that show that we're often up near 400 parts per million, just like we are today, up around 400 parts per million.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the CO2 now, because it's so fascinating that as the CO2 rises, the ability for plants and the photosynthesis that goes on is exponentially raised as well. And it just has such an amazing effect. And then when we are going through a glacial time, for instance, the CO2 is hiding out in the deep, deep ocean. And I'm wondering, what are the effects? Like, what are the effects of CO2 and photosynthesis? And then what are the effects when CO2 is hiding out deep in the ocean? What's it doing in the ocean as an effect?
Well, that's a very good point. CO2... it changes drastically over time. And every time we didn't talk about one of our largest cycles. We have carbon dioxide and temperature cycles, like I said, every 230 years, but we have a much larger cycle every 116,000 years. This is called the interglacial cycles, or the cold part of it is the glacial cycles, where just 15,000 years ago, we had ice a mile thick from New England and probably just above Colorado, northward through Canada. Year-round, ice a mile thick. What happens is that cuts down on what we call the natural feedback of the carbon dioxide from the soil and or the oceans. So during a glacial period, we have a natural huge decrease of atmospheric carbon dioxide because what happens is the oceans absorb it during this long period of time, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 years, stores it, and it's stored there to be released back in the atmosphere when we get into our warm interglacial period like we're in now. But during a glacial period, what happens is as the carbon dioxide goes way down, and I'm saying way down, it goes from, the peak values of 400 parts per million, way down to maybe 160 parts per million. That's a huge decrease in carbon dioxide, natural decrease. Photosynthesis drops by 50 to 75% during a glacial period. That's a huge difference. When we get into the warm interglacial period, like we're in now, carbon dioxide naturally rises because all the oceans are dumping the carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere, and we have bare ground up into Canada, and that's dumping stored carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere. So because of that, we have huge increases in the atmosphere like we have seen during the past 1,000 years and even past 100 years. But the good thing about this is plant life loves carbon dioxide and warm temperatures. So what happens? Photosynthesis rises by 50 to 75% during this period. That is fantastic because the byproduct or the waste product of photosynthesis is oxygen. And we need oxygen. When dinosaurs roamed way back 60 million years ago, 62 million years ago, we had carbon dioxide not at 300 parts per million, but up at 1,000 to 1,500 parts per million, very high levels. Atmospheric oxygen was 31%. Today, atmospheric oxygen is down to 21%. And carbon dioxide down to, what, 300 to 400 parts per million. Well, when the dinosaurs roamed, the animals were huge, big, plant life very robust. The Earth was robust. Now we have smaller life forms, lower photosynthesis, and much lower carbon dioxide, and much lower oxygen levels. So if we compare the two time periods, we'd have to look at it and say, well, carbon dioxide is not that bad for the atmosphere. It's actually a very, very good atmospheric gas for the Earth, and it's really needed for photosynthesis, plant life, and human life, and oxygen.
So as we are in this time of low percentage of oxygen in the air, the CO2 is rising to help shift that.
Correct. It's rising, and what's happened is we see it in cycles where most science says that, okay, we've been usually during a interglacial period that we're in now, we've been in for about 10, 15,000 years. Normally they say carbon dioxide peaks out at maybe 290 to 300 parts per million, and it kind of stays there for a couple thousand years. Well, that's if you're not looking at the peaks of the 230-year global warming cycles. There's other research done by, there's a researcher, Dr. Beck. What he took was fossilized leaflets, especially pine needles in the northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, and he looked at the leaflets because the leaflets have what we call little plant stomatas inside the leaflet.
Yes.
That's like our lungs.
Yes.
Our lungs, we breathe in the atmosphere, oxygen and so the leaflets, well, they breathe in atmosphere also, and carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide, plants love carbon dioxide. So what he found was a correlation between how much carbon dioxide is in the air and to the plant stomatas. So he could determine over time, just like in ice cores, how much carbon dioxide is in the air at a given time. And the good thing about plant stomata, using that type of research, it is not a mean value over a 1,000-year period. That leaf lives for 1 year. So you're getting a look at what the carbon dioxide was in a given year, not a mean value. So what his research found was, as I said, we have global warming cycles every 230 years. What he found was, carbon dioxide normally peaks out during the warm period of the global warming cycle. Then in the course of only 100 years, carbon dioxide can drop as much as 100 to 140 parts per million in just 100 years. So what we would see during the past 1,200 years, we've had five global warming cycles, five global cooling cycles. So we'd see carbon dioxide going up and down over the course of each cycle, as much as 120, 30 parts per million. And this actually happened in 1860. And this is very important. In 1860, instruments said we had 260 parts per million. That's instruments, not a mean value, instruments. Some ice core samples said carbon dioxide was 260 parts per million. The plant stomata science said we had carbon dioxide at 260 parts per million. Well, today, we're up around 385 to 90 parts per million. Instruments, ice cores, and the leaflets all say the same thing, that we're up around 385 parts per million. So this means that the plant stomata research is correct, that we do have large swings of 120 parts per million every 100 years, every 100 to 200 years. So the bottom line is that was a perfectly natural cycle from 1860 to now for carbon dioxide to rise from 260 parts per million to up near 400 parts per million, a perfectly natural rise in carbon dioxide.
And what I want to ask you about now is the pollution values. You know, obviously around industry, we have a lot of industrial waste. So are these CO2 levels not acting / reacting at all to these? And or how do you see this, and or do you see it as such a minimal effect? I mean, obviously we can see it, we can smell it, our breathing, the effects, you know, the fact that we do not have as much oxygen as you're describing, it's not a direct result of this pollution, but we do have this pollution. And
Go ahead. Oh, we certainly do have pollution, and we need to address pollution, and we need to determine, well, what chemicals are, labeled as pollution? Way the EPA has it set up now, anything in excess can be called a pollutant, which means if we have too much nitrogen in the air, it can be called a pollutant. If we have too much CO2, if we have too much water vapor, anything, it can be called a polluting type of gas. Now, yes, we do have all kinds of chemicals being spewed into the atmosphere from industry and automobiles. We know that that's a fact. The big question is, how much of it during the past 100 years is from fossil fuel burning? We can see the signature of the fossil fuel type of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but there's a big debate about how much of it is from our burning of fossil fuels of it, and how much is natural. That's the big debate. Now, what I'm saying is most of the increase during the past 100 to 120 years, most of it is natural carbon dioxide. And even if we are adding some of the carbon dioxide to it, where we are up around 390 parts per million isn't really any different than we were back at about year 1000 AD, where we were also around 400 parts per million.
More next week with David Dilley, CEO of Global Weather Oscillations. He's an independent climate cycle researcher and forecaster. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.